This is Richard Pitino, episode 85 of the Talking Grammar Podcast.
All right. Well, as you just heard, this is episode 85 of the Talking Grammar Podcast. And today's guest is Richard Pitino, the head coach of the UNM Lobo men's basketball team. Kind of putting a bow on the 2023-24 season a little bit here. And as we do so, I want to remind you that this episode and all these episodes of the Talking Grammar Podcast are presented by TLC Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, Electrical. Much appreciation for them for doing so and for helping bring these podcasts to you and all the content we're bringing at the Albuquerque Journal. You can be a part of too. And I always ask if you can subscribe to local journalism, subscribe to the Albuquerque Journal, help us bring you some of this Lobo coverage, not just during the season, but in the off season. Podcasts like this, conversations like the one you're about to see with myself and Richard Pitino. And year-round, I want to keep bringing these to you. We also have the high school content. Obviously, James Yotis is bringing a lot of podcasts to the table. And Sean Ryder started his Lobo football podcast, Ryder's Block. So appreciate you for watching and hope you enjoy this conversation with Richard Pitino as we, like I said, kind of put a bow, put a wrap up on the 2023-24 season. Sorry about that. They got back to the NCAA tournament. Does that mean the rebuild is complete? What does it mean for the future? A couple players leaving. Are some new players coming in? What can we expect from the Donovan Dents and the JT Toppins of the Lobo basketball team next year? Are they going to be back in this transfer portal world? What about Richard Pitino and his name coming up for other coaching jobs? We do talk about all that. So hope you enjoy this conversation, episode 85 of the Talking Grammar Podcast. And enjoy. Richard, thank you for coming back to the studios, and we had you in the preseason, and I am glad to now kind of put a bow on the season because it's only official once you come back and talk with the podcast, obviously. But what did I just kind of want to start off with? What did you think of the season? What's your general thought when you tell people, "Hey, how was your year?"
Great. Yeah, I mean, I think we added six pieces. So I think now that's beginning to come more and more common. So it's not a appropriate excuse anymore with people. But
still new, though.
It's new, and I was concerned. I certainly felt the non-conference was hard because Jalen and Jamal didn't play a lot together. We thought Donovan would make a jump from year one to year two. We really liked him when we signed him, but I didn't think he'd make that type of a jump so soon. So I think as the non-conference was happening, we said, okay, probably got to play these three together. So I think we tried to figure that out. But, you know, when you take a step back, just did some amazing things. 26 wins. We just continued to progress. We won the Mountain West tournament, obviously, made the NCAA tournament. So anytime you take over a program, year one is always a bit of a wash. Sometimes year two is even a bit of a wash, but it certainly with the transfer portal, you can get the train back on the tracks a little bit quicker. But the progression from each year has been phenomenal. And, I think the goal has always been, yes, we want to go to NCAA tournaments. We want to win Mountain West championships. But internally to grow this thing and make it stronger and stronger, and it absolutely has done that.
So the big picture, you know, in these parts and long before you got here was the decade-long NCAA tournament drought. Now that you guys got back to the NCAA tournament, there's sort of a sense that the rebuild is complete. Do you view it that way? Or is rebuild not even the right word for a coach? I mean, I don't know. You want to see progress every year. I understand that. But is there a completion to what you guys have done and now something different?
Well, every year you're trying to accomplish enough things because you want that journey to be fun and you want to be a part of championship teams. Great. But you want to build a program. And now when I'm doing Zooms with recruits, we got our graphics on there and we've got our all conference players and our 26 wins and, you know, three ranked opponents in the pit. And, you know, so like you want to put your stamp on the program. I think Coach Alford obviously did an amazing job in the 6 years he's done it. But I feel like now it's our program. We've got so many great things to talk about. And you always, as a coach, they always say, you know, he left it stronger than when he got here. And right now it is as strong as it's ever been. And that's in everything. And with a lot of help from a lot of people. So I don't think the rebuild is over. I think you're starting over every year. But I feel like certainly if we retain the ones that we want to retain, who are all here, and add the right pieces, you know, we could be in the hunt again.
Well, I want to talk about sort of the retention in a second. I'm going to ask you, does one high moment or low moment stand out this past season? Do you kind of look at it in terms of, you know, we're always looking for lists and rankings and stuff, but do you have a number one kind of moment that you'll look back on this season?
Oh, I mean, the low moment was for sure Air Force. Yeah. Just that was one of the lower moments. Not, I hate to disrespect Air Force because Air Force can do, they do it to one or two teams every single year. But I was just so disappointed by, for one, I hate losing in the pit. I just hate it. I think our fans deserve, you're not going to win every game. But our fans, they show up. You know, there's some fan bases that are loud and they complain, but they don't show up. Ours do. And so I always say a part of me dies when we lose in the pit. So losing that game was really disappointing. But the highs, there were so many of them. I mean, the non-conference doing what we did with Nelly just getting here, guys being hurt, you know, winning some really good games, blowing out New Mexico State, winning at New Mexico State, although they're in a rebuild, certainly to sweep your rivals, great. You know, the moments in the pit where you're blowing out Nevada, you're beating San Diego State pretty handily, you know, Utah State pretty handily. You know, so it was a great year. And then to go on that run, the conference tournament was so weird because I really felt like, yeah, you got to beat Air Force, but I felt like probably win one game, maybe two, and we'd be good. But it, we had to play under this pressure, and it didn't matter because we won it. So, you know, I mean, cutting down the nets, I did that NIT. Definitely different when you win a league title with your fans in Vegas. And then I think maybe the highest moment was the next day flying in that airport and seeing all the fans. I mean, it's people with tears in their eyes. That's yeah. That's special.
It's I mean, it's unique, obviously, and it is unique to Albuquerque. Probably not, I guess, entirely unique. There's probably three or four other places, but pretty rare to have that at the airport. And I think it spoke to, I mean, it's only been a decade relative to people's lifespans. That's not that long, but man, that's, it's been a long time here. I don't think they had gone 3 or 4 years without at least an NIT here since the 60s, since the pit was open. And for you guys to not only do the NIT last year, but to get back to the NCAA tournament, there were a lot of people that were waiting quite a while for that. So I know it was a big thing for a lot of fans here. I am curious, though, what your response was, or I guess your expectation. I know the players, I think you expected to be in the NCAA tournament this year. You thought you had a roster going into the season that was that should have been there. So were you surprised or disappointed that it came down to so close and it came down to you having to win it?
Well, I'm not disappointed. Disappointed is the wrong word because we won it. It's, you know, I'm not going to be the coach that complains about the process when we made the tournament. Right. Ask the people that didn't make the tournament, right? So I think that part's a little bit silly. Surprised. And I think the problem is the net ranking. I think the NCAA needs to be clearer on it because how could you be sitting at 22 or whatever we were treated as a great win if you beat us, but you're not treating us like we're a great team? And it wasn't just us. I think it was a lot of teams. So I think there's just – I think the NCAA will be a little bit more transparent on it. I think the net makes sense. I don't know why the top 35 net teams are not the top at-large and, you know, you divvy up the seeds and go from there, but they clearly didn't do that. So not surprised or angry because we won it, but – I think we're all trying to figure out non-conference schedule. What do we do? You know, and I think the Mountain West is in they're in a bind because I think the clear thing from talking to people on the committee and so on is you got to schedule Power 5, Power 6 teams in non-conference. It's not really easy for us to do.
No, San Diego State can do it. And there's not really a whole lot of other teams that can. UNLV kind of can just because of their location.
Yeah.
And Power 5 teams aren't afraid. Afraid's not even the word I want to get into because that's loaded. They're interested in going to Vegas for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
But what would a Power 5 team want to come to Albuquerque for?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing I could say now is we can look back and say our profile and our resume is better now than we first got here.
Yeah.
So if you lose to us, it's not a catastrophic loss where when we first got here it was. Certainly there's a reputation of being hard to win here. We know that. But I think it's never going to be easy, but I think it's going to be maybe a little bit more achievable. The hard part now is the Pac-12 it's done. You don't need to schedule like that in the Big 12 or, you know, the SEC or so because you have so many opportunities. So as I said before, the things that we need to do better at is our MTE's got to be better. It will be. It'll be a high major MTE. We don't have an announcement yet on exactly who will be in it, but it'll be high major teams, power five teams or whatever. And then that neutral site game, we got to knock out of the park. We thought Santa Clara, they'd traditionally been a one or a two quad. They ended up being a quad three. Now, they were close, so it wasn't like it was a bad game, but that didn't bring you a lot of value. I think New Mexico State, as Coach Hooten rebuilds that program, will be a better, you know, but you got to be aggressive. I think the committee looked at Boise, Colorado State, us, and Utah State is all very similar. And then San Diego State was different because of their non-conference schedule. Yeah. So we certainly understand that. And I think our program, I've always said your program will grow, your schedule will grow as the program grows. And we're ready for that now. And we're going to be super aggressive.
Well, I'll make one last note on the net there. If the net is the set of rules or the metric that determines the NCAA's quadrant system, and they use the quads to sort of, as one of their metrics, how many quad ones did you have, quad twos? This year was the first year that two teams in the 20s in the going into the tournament, you guys at 22, Indiana State at 29, didn't make the NCAA tournament had you guys not won the Mountain West tournament, of course. And the previous record was 33, and I think there was only one other team in the 30s. So it was an extreme outlier what they did with the net this year. And for that to be kind of the set of rules that everybody went into the season with, it's weird to change it during the season.
And that's what everybody thought. Yeah. I mean, everybody thought that. And it,
do what you can to build your net up, whatever it takes.
Yeah,
right?
It just seems, yes. And it just seems like they're moving the goalposts.
Yeah.
Fine. Just tell us what the goalposts, where they are, and we'll all adjust. I think it's good for college basketball that the non-conference is more relevant than it is, especially a place like here where it really cares. So great. But, you know, we want home and homes, absolutely, but they're not easy, but we'll keep trying.
And it was noteworthy that those are two non, you know, power conference, power five, whatever, power six in basketball teams. I want to put a bow on the next part of this is the Mashburn House era. Let's start with House, and then we'll talk about Mashburn because he has the transfer component in this, at least transfer portal. Jalen House, this season was He Jalen'd more than he had ever Jalen'd before and just kind of became this really disliked figure with opposing fan bases, but just one of the favorite players I've ever covered. And I'm curious how you think he handled what he became this year, because it was more than what he was the year before.
Yeah, I think the darkness of the cloud of the future affected him early. I think him and Mash missing those games, not getting into rhythm in the non-conference, and all saying for a guy like Jalen, like, why did I come back? Maybe I could have just started my pro career somewhere else. And we had a lot of emotional conversations in the office. And, you know, to see him go out the way he did was phenomenal. Jalen is for one, off the court, he's nothing like he is on the court.
Yeah.
He is really soft-spoken. Never an issue of going to class academically, did great, great heart. You know, a kid, there are certain guys you coach, like, you know, you'll stay in touch with. He will definitely be one I'll stay in touch with. I love him. I appreciate him. But you're not going to get a motor like that again.
Yeah.
You're just not. That is, it's unique and special. Could be maddening at times for sure, but we don't beat San Diego State, in that game. But I thought his will to win really showed in Vegas.
It seemed to rub off on, I mean, I think True Washington was the most obvious to me that maybe Jalen influenced, but I do think there were some other guys on the team, even some of the older guys at times, that Jalen's will, I guess, was kind of contagious and rubbed off.
Yeah, when he got here, he was not a good leader. Not that he was a bad leader. He wasn't like a bad locker room guy by any means, but he wasn't outspoken. He was a bit of an introvert. And didn't get a lot of votes for captain year one. I was very surprised by that. Year two got a little bit more, and then year three was an anonymous captain. And I love seeing that. And, you know, he, like everybody, he probably needed to be better in some of the games. He was disinterested of leading. That's the growth of all of our players and coaching staff. But when it was a moment, he was ready. At San Diego State, I've never seen a kid encourage fans to taunt him. He didn't care. Utah State, the vulgarity that was coming out of that crowd was offensive, inappropriate.
I love that fan base, and they're the nicest people outside of game time, which is, you know, to me, and Lobo fans will hate hearing this, there's two fan bases, really, that like are off the court and in the stands what Jalen House is on the court. They're easy to hate, and it's the show, and it's the Utah State student section.
Yeah.
I think they're both great performers during games, and I think they make college basketball great. But, man, everybody else hates them for a reason because they probably do cross whatever people think of as a line. That's exactly what Jalen House is. And then off the court, the Utah State fans are some of the nicest people in the league.
What was the other fan base, us?
I'd say the show San Diego State and the Utah State fan base. I mean, like those two student sections, to me, are what Jalen is on the court. They're really hard to like during the moment and during the game. And you just think horrible things about them. But then because they say some nasty things. And I think people are surprised that Utah State can get kind of nasty, too.
Yeah. I mean, I always just hope for humanity with every little thing, but you know, I've been doing it long enough to where I think 10 fans saying something obnoxious is different than, you know, everybody. So, Utah State, they care. They have a great home court. Obviously San Diego State's had, you know, the most sustained success. So, I think all the venues are fun. You know, you always hope they try to keep it, you know, above board within reason. And for the most part they do.
Yeah. I think, if anything crossed the line this year, it was probably not the student section so much. There were some other people located around some arenas sometimes that went at Jalen pretty hard and, you know, blamed him for doing things that they were doing. And it was interesting to see that, cause I hadn't seen that with a Lobo player yet in my time covering them. Mashburn and Forsling both entered the transfer portal, and we'll get into sort of the current state of basketball in the transfer portal in a larger sense. But with Mashburn leaving, him and House were part of the identity of this three-year rebuild. Were the three of you. It was you, House, and Mashburn. And Mashburn's been with you, and obviously the connection long before you and Mashburn Jr. was your dad and his dad. So I'm just curious, the Mashburn ending at UNM, were you surprised by it? I guess how long did you know that maybe he was going to go into the transfer portal? And what can you tell fans about that? Was it a bad breakup?
No, the furthest thing from a bad breakup. We still keep in touch. You know, it was time for him. Played for me for 4 years. Did a lot of obviously amazing things. Believed in me. Believed in Albuquerque when he never saw it. You know, I mean, people got to realize that. I think this year was hard on him. You know, I think the social media criticism he got was very hard on him. I wish he didn't read it, and I wish he didn't pay attention to it. It's not just our fan base that does that. That's most fan bases that care. And, every fan base needs to understand that it does affect the players. It just does. I think that got to him. But I also think he responded in an amazing way. At Nevada, San Diego State first half, we don't beat them. So his work here was done. I mean, it really was. And, it was a very mutual, agreement on them. We both thought this was the right thing for the growth of him. So I'm not sure what exactly he'll do. You know, I think, he's got to find the right spot for him. He just wants the ball. You know, he loves basketball. The one thing about Jalen and Mash that I've always told our players was they've never had a bad practice. It's never been an issue of effort. They bring it every single day. So Mash is another guy. You may be frustrated maybe with shot selection at time. We're going to miss those two guys a lot. And not just on the court, but high character people. You know, I mean, they're going to be great husbands and fathers. They're people with great substance.
What people, I think sometimes coaches say this, and that you can't point to a good example, but I think both of them are the example of when your two high-profile guys or your two best players are the ones that actually work the hardest in practice, makes the whole locker room and the whole, you know, now that it's baseball season, I use the term clubhouse a lot. Or is he a good clubhouse guy? Like those two guys, even if they're not vocal in the locker room, if they're at practice working their ass off, like that's a good sign for everybody else. It kind of, that gets contagious a little bit.
Yeah, and I think with those two guys especially, I gave them a longer leash. I did. And I thought they deserved it. I thought they earned it. You know, I think they missed three or four in a row. I'm not yanking them. I'm just not. They've earned the right. They brought this program back. Not everybody's the same. You're not going to coach every guy the same. But as I said before, it was never, ever an issue with them about working hard. And, yeah, you always want players to be more vocal than they are. I don't really go in the locker room a lot since game day because I kind of let them be their space. But when it's time for practice, those two guys brought it every day.
I'll move forward a little bit to where we are now. The season's over. You guys obviously wish the Clemson game would have been different, but it is what it is. What does a coach do in the days and maybe weeks even after a season? And how much has that changed now? Where April now, it's not, you know, there aren't games. There's really only three games, two Final Four games and a national championship. But April's kind of become maybe as crucial a month for college basketball as any other month. And it's because of the portal. It's because of the coaching moves, too. It's because of everything that happens in April. As crazy as it sounds, it seems like April maybe has become the biggest month of the year. How busy is April for you now, and how different is that from 10 years ago?
It's like having a new job. You used to, if you had a scholarship or two available in the spring, you were like, that's weird. Why would we do that? Now John Calipari just took the Arkansas job. He has no players, and he'll fill it. You know, he'll figure it out. So, you know, you have coaches complain a lot, and we are the furthest thing from the bad guy, you know, the good guys in this profession. We're always looked at as the bad guys. But I think one of the reasons why the coaches complain is the model is very hard to sustain. And our fans, our administration, our boosters, they want sustained success.
Yeah.
It's never easy, right? I mean, there's always going to be elements that are difficult. But for right now, the days are consisting of watching a lot of synergy, spending a lot of time with our current guys. My whole roster could walk in today and say, I'm leaving. Yeah. I'm gone. See you later. And it's frightening, you know. So the fall used to be football game weekends. We're bringing recruits in. You're not doing that as much anymore. So I've already had three Zooms this morning. They're all about 45 minutes. The great thing is we've got really good content from this year. You know, we could sell a lot, which is great. You know, and you try to figure out what you need, you know, and what the beauty is, it's easier to watch film now than it's ever been before. You could pull up a D2 kid, D3 kid on synergy. You can see every basket. So that part of it's good, but they're being over recruited. There's a lot of them. Some are being overlooked. So it's challenging for sure. You can't neglect the guys on your campus. They're the most important thing. And then you got to lay out your vision for them and then try to complement what you have in your locker room.
You guys would be in a position where I think you'll be a top three team in the Mountain West if you're just able, whether or not you guys add anybody. I know you're going to add some people, but whether or not you add any key instant impact kind of guys or rotation guys, like if you just kept what you had, keep what you have at this point, at the present tense. If you keep Donovan Dant, if you keep JT Toppin, if you keep Nelly Jr. Joseph, Mustafa Amzeal, True Washington, like that alone is going to be one of the better starting fives in the Mountain West Conference if you can just keep them. And I'm curious how you approach retention. Yeah. You know, 10 years ago, I don't know how often you even went to a kid and said, I want to make sure you're staying. What, you know, are you happy? What do we need to talk about staying? And now you have to actually, do you re-recruit them?
You don't re-recruit them, but we had our exit meetings, I guess, the Monday after we played, and it went pretty much the way I thought it would go. You know, Mash and Sebastian came in and said, we think it's time to move on. We said, great. Everybody else said, we're good. We're all in. But there's people working their people. There's people. It's never been easier to access a kid. You could just send them a direct message on Instagram, right, or Snapchat or whatever, and it could be an agent. It could be another assistant coach. It could be an AAU coach. And, you know, assistant coach may call their high school coach and say, hey, how's John Smith doing, your sophomore? Oh, yeah, just tell so-and-so we got this or that. So it's, as I said before, you know, nobody's going to feel sorry for us, but there's just no protection.
Yeah.
You know, there's buyouts for coaches. It would be like Eddie Nunez. I don't know how many sports we have. 16. Eddie Nunez having no buyouts for any of his coaches.
Yeah.
He'd have to hire new guys every single time. So everybody's dealing with it. We're not the only ones. It's not unique. So the hard part is, I think, is fans are treating it like it was 10 years ago. Somebody transfers, what's wrong with the program? No, like sometimes guys just want to move on. So right now, as it sits today, we are in a phenomenal spot. But still got a couple of weeks. I think everybody's in a great place. They're working their butts off. We're spending a lot more time with them now just so people don't get in their ear as much. But, you know, if somebody wants to move on, like, give me your reason and I'll listen to you. That doesn't mean it's always a bad reason if you want to move on.
Yeah.
And you just – I think the thing you don't want is you don't want them coming in 2 days before May 1st and saying I'm leaving. You would hope – if you're really thinking about it, you can give us some time to figure this thing out.
May 1st so you guys all know, is the actually, is it the end of April or is it May 1st?
They can still do it on May 1st. Yeah.
Either way, the end of it, they have until about the end of April and maybe even on the 24 hours of May 1st where they can enter the portal. That doesn't mean it's over at that point. It just means whoever's in there,
yeah,
they can get recruited, but you could recruit them all the way up until September, I guess, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, they can put the, so there'll be plenty of players available that will keep recruiting in May. You normally want to get that done so they can all be to summer school, you know, but it's just, you know, the hard part is, like, we've got some really good pieces. Like, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to go get a point guard when we have Donovan Dent.
Or you can use a ball handler, though, but, like, that doesn't mean a primary.
Ball handler guard, yeah, but not a primary point guard. And we love Cade Dotson, and we think he's going to be really good. Or a JT. Like, those guys, people are going to see those guys being, I'm not really going to start over them. You know, so yeah. Transparency is the biggest thing with them. But we're more so their people. I think these guys are young. I think they'd all prefer to stay, but there's people in their ear all the time. So you try to recruit the best families that understand it the best you can.
All right. I want to ask you about the NCAA tournament. I know we talked during it a little bit, and how much did you watch of it? Did you enjoy it? Your good friend got back-to-back NCAA championships on UConn staff, Kamani Young. And I'm curious, does a coach enjoy the NCAA tournament?
I hate the first two rounds because there's so much hope for everybody in the tournament. They're all believing. Then everybody kind of loses. You're like, all right, there's only 16 teams left, plus the NIT. But I watched, if it was on, I watched, but I was not looking and dying to watch. Now, Final Four, you wrote about it, obviously. Kamani, who I just spoke to as I was driving in, I want so badly for him to be a head coach. And he's not dying for a job, but he deserves it. I mean, he really, really does. And Kevin Keats was another one that I worked with, you know, feel responsible for getting him into college coaching because helped him get the Louisville job. So proud of him as well. So I watched the Final Four a little bit. I didn't watch the championship game as much because I was flying and the Wi-Fi was horrendous. But you want to be a part of it. You know, every coach does, and you dream of being. I was lucky as assistant to be on that stage. I've been lucky to grow up around it, and I want to coach in it, you know. So it's awesome, and it never seems to disappoint.
Your son, 9 years old, beat me for the second straight year in picking an NCAA tournament bracket and talks a lot of trash about it. And I've said this to you before when you were in here in the preseason. I'm not comfortable with – how just open and comfortable he is with talking trash to me about it.
Yes.
I have not seen him in person since the NCAA tournament ended. I know he knows at this point that he beat me for the second straight year. I am curious how Jack Pitino took the news that he beat me for a second.
Very inappropriate, kind of a wrestling gesture that I can't do on camera, but I didn't, you know, we've been trying to get him to stop doing it. But he was very proud of the victory. One of the things that I know it sounds lame, but one of the reasons we've loved Albuquerque so much is the connection that Jack has had with a lot of these fans. Like, I think I told the story the other day. I took Jack to a movie, and legitimately the popcorn guy goes, "Hey, coach." And he looks down and says, "Hey, Jack." Like, people know who he is. And, you know, I have two daughters who are part of it as well, but a boy, men's basketball, a little bit different. And I think they see just how much he loves it. So, that is not lost on us, the treatment of him. And he lives for it. You know, he does. And we got to rein him in. We got to humble him because he gets a little arrogant around the house for sure.
Is he going to get into coaching? I mean, it's so young, obviously. But, like, he loves basketball, right?
He loves basketball. I think the biggest thing about coaching is not – my dad was the same way with me. He didn't discourage coaching. He just made sure I understood how challenging it is on a family. Moving from Albuquerque to New Mexico was really hard for me. It was probably harder on me than it was them, but I worried about them.
How many of your three children were born in Minnesota?
Two of the three. Okay. So Ava was young, born in Gainesville. But that was home. Yeah. And I found myself wanting to win at Minnesota more so because I just wanted to keep my job and keep my family there because we had built a life there and I didn't want it to go away. Did not. And I remember moving down here and really, really worrying about my kids. And I was talking to a coach the other day because he was agonizing over moving and this and that. And I said, I'll tell you what, Albuquerque feels like home right now. And my kids are doing great. They're around great people. They're doing great sports. And the coaches are awesome. So that part of it is definitely challenging. But I do believe it beats a regular job. I really do believe that. And there are so many positives, and nobody's making us do it, you know, so I don't complain about it a lot. It's evolving and changing for sure, but it's still great.
As I do, I will shift then from what you're saying there about you do like it here, you're enjoying it here, it's good on your family. You struggled when you wanted to win at Minnesota so you wouldn't have to move the family. In April now, coaching changes are as big as the transfer portal in college basketball, and your name now for two off seasons not only has just kind of popped up, but actually some communication with another school. How do you, I guess, explain maybe or reconcile to, or how should fans take the fact that a year ago you talked with University of South Florida? I know there were some family reasons there. And then this year your name comes up with Louisville and you talked with them and you've been pretty open about the fact that, yes, I did talk with them. You weren't trying to hide it. But what do you tell Lobo fans, some that probably don't maybe understand the money part of it and all that? How do you explain the fact that you say you love it here, but you are also talking to other jobs if they come to you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not pursuing anything. We do love it here. But things change. You know, I really like Eddie Nunez. I really like President Stokes. Who knows where they're going to be? You know, so I feel great that we can win at a high level. We've won 48 games in 2 years. This is a great basketball job. Whatever basketball job I'm at, I want to win. Like that, not to say you can't win at Minnesota, but I really struggled with, I don't know if you can consistently win in that league. There is no reason why New Mexico can't consistently win in the Mountain West. I didn't pursue South Florida. They reached out to me, and I said, it's intriguing. My brother lives there, very close to my son, Jack. My sister and brother live in Lauderdale as well. A lot of family dynamics. I was offered more money and didn't take it, and wasn't disappointed that I didn't take it. Louisville reached out. That pulled out the heartstrings a little bit, and it was very unique in a lot of ways.
14, 15 years, right?
16 years.
16 years.
So I lived there for three, but, you know, I was in college, but you'd go back, so it felt like home. But there was also some challenging family dynamics of my dad's not real excited about that for me right now. There's still some, you know, he's not happy with the way it ended there, and I understand that. So it wasn't like this, I'm dying for that job. That wasn't it at all. And I wasn't real disappointed when they say, hey, we're going to go hire Pat Kelsey. There was not one part of me that was down about it. So, you know, if somebody calls me and I feel like I can win at it, I'm going to at least listen to them. But that doesn't mean I want to leave Albuquerque. My goal is to continue to have success so that every coach that wins and every coach that goes to the tournament is getting called. Every coach at any level. It's just happening. I'm not dying to leave here by any means. I'm dying to win a Mountain West regular season championship. I'm dying to be that first coach to bring us to a Sweet 16. I know it's hard to do. There's nothing easy about it, but I feel like it's been a lot of fun. There's a lot of things I love about it. So I'm not pursuing anything, but I'm also not going to be the coach that's going to sit up here and lie to you and say, I want to be here the rest of my life. So many things. You may not want me here that long. I don't know.
It's fair to point out to you – you don't have to in your position, but I'll point out, you are a coach who is at New Mexico because you got fired from your previous job. The previous two coaches at New Mexico, again, you're here because they got fired at New Mexico.
Yeah.
The coaching industry, while at this level, pays just fine. You're not having to worry about that. It is one that turns over really quickly, and it doesn't always end the way a lot of people like myself in the media sometimes kind of poke at the coaching industry about, where coaches just leave at any time they want. A lot of times it ends because the coach was fired.
Yeah.
And that does affect not only your family, but a whole coaching staff's family too.
You gotta stay on top of it as best you can. I mean, you know, I had years remaining on my contract at Minnesota. They didn't want me to coach anymore. Yeah. Not mad about it. Like, I still talk to Mark Coyle to this day, but they owed me another year. They didn't give me to the end of my contract, and that's the business. So it's, you're always trying to strengthen your position as best you can, you know, so that you can build stability for your family. As I said before, do I think you can win here? Absolutely. Do I think Eddie Nunez is a phenomenal AD? I do. How long will he be here? I don't know. I think he should be an SEC AD. I think he should be a big – I don't want him to leave, but I think he deserves that. I think he's a terrific AD, and I think President Stokes has been amazingly supportive. So I don't have any gripes with New Mexico. I think it's a great place.
All that said, New Mexico – isn't at the top of the funding tree in the Mountain West. Fans do expect you guys to win it, and fans do expect NCAA tournaments. You guys are about fifth or sixth, and some depending on how you kind of look at some of the funding categories and coaching salary, you guys aren't at the top, and you guys aren't second or third either.
Yeah.
And fans probably should recognize that a little bit. Maybe I need to report it a little more so they do recognize it. I don't think they care necessarily in the grand scheme of things, but it should be, for context, pointed out that you guys aren't funded like the top team in the Mountain West, but are expected by your fans to be there.
Yeah, and that's the goal is – although we have gone 13-22-26, great. There's the other side of it that we're really trying to grow as well. And, you know, not even necessarily for my salary. I'm so well compensated. But, you know, if you're going to have the head coach, whatever I am in the league, I don't even know. But let's get that staff to top three. And I know Eddie understands that, and he's working hard to do that. But there's challenges there as well. We have the best fan base in the league, if not one of the best in the country. How can we continue to improve, take the success that we've had? And we've done that. Like, Eddie has been so open to doing that, whether it's redoing the locker room, redoing the weight room, getting more chartered flights. Like, there's things you can do besides the obvious head coach salary that everybody talks about more than anything else. And I think Eddie has been absolutely willing to, when we get that success and we get that revenue, to pour it back into the program. And that, to me, is the most important thing, so that we can keep our staff sustained success, so that we're not turning over a million assistants every year, and make sure that, you know, morale is good. You know, I mean, as I said before, it has improved and it still has a long way to go. But I think everybody knows that, and they're willing to fight and continue to get better on that.
You've had pretty remarkable staff retention. For going into your fourth year, you did have Eric Brown leave. You had Andy Hill leave, coincidentally, both this past year on the same team. And maybe they're on the move again. I don't know if it's any – I don't know what they're doing yet officially. They're still listed as assistant coaches at Utah State. But Danny Sprinkle obviously is at Washington now. But anyway, you've had pretty good staff retention. The news yesterday, as we record this, yesterday it got made official. Isaac Chu has been promoted to associate head coach. I'll ask two-part question here. Any staff changes that you know of right now, or do you expect any this offseason? But also, can you speak a little bit to the importance of Isaac Chu? I kind of realized yesterday, as I did a little update for the Albuquerque Journal on Chu getting the promotion, I haven't done much on assistant coaches. I've done some on Pilipovic just because he's well known here, but I probably haven't relayed it as my job, kind of telling the story of Lobo basketball, which is sort of how I see my job. I haven't told people the role Isaac Chu plays in what you guys have done for 3 years. He's been a big part of what you guys have done.
Yeah, well, the one thing, Dave Pilipovic, you wrote the story, went to NCAA tournament. How many years has it been that he'd been in the profession and didn't go to the
tournament? Yeah, 36, and he went to a D2, I think.
36. Once. Shows you how hard it is to get to tournament. Yeah. Dave is a good coach and works his butt off. And love him. He's been so good for me. And the whole staff really has. And that is important. Everybody always asks me, you know, how do you build a consistent winner? You got to get your staff right. 100%. And the ones that are right, you got to do your very best to keep them. There's no reason why a guy like Isaac Chu can't get a head job from here, in my opinion. I've had multiple guys become head coaches. I'm proud of that. That's something my dad taught me from this day was he used to always say, I don't hire assistant coaches. I hire future head coaches. And Isaac Chu is that. And, you know, I think Tarvis and Aaron can grow to that as well. Dave is in a different stage of his life, but I think he could be a head coach as well. So, Isaac was with me at the beginning, and I remember being in those offices with the Zooms and, you know, recruiting a Jalen. Jamal was a different deal. I certainly recruited him, but phenomenal recruiter. Very, very, just very invested in the program. Sometimes, see, as a head coach, you take pure ownership of everything, every little thing. If the office is dirty, it's your fault because you're not holding your staff accountable. If the graphics are old, it's on you to tell them what you want. But you got to have assistants that take ownership of everything as well, and they don't always do that. Sometimes assistants get in their little bubble of, well, I got my four or five guys that I'm recruiting, and I've got my two or three guys on the roster that I am, you know, in charge of. Isaac Chu feels responsible for everything, and that's why he's a great assistant coach. And that's why it's important that as we have success, we're able to take care of him because he's just as important. You know, he's just as much of an influence on that success as everybody else is, as well as myself. So I trust him. I believe in him. I think, as I said, I want him to continue to help us win championships, and then let me get you a head job from here. You don't need to go to a power whatever to
and then get your head job.
You don't need that. Now, you'll get more money, whatever, but like, we're going to do our very best to continue to compensate you, but we can do it all here. And I think he believes that. And he had, just like me, you talk about, he had schools coming after him as well. And it makes me proud when he comes into my office and says, such and such is called, but I want to stay and work for you. Like, that's very fulfilling and gratifying.
I would be remiss if I didn't circle back to something I forgot about. We talked about coaching jobs and you talking, you know, the Louisville situation, and you explained well. I do want to mention the Kentucky thing because your name did come up. And for those that don't know, I do bug you like it's still in the season, and I send you text messages and annoy you all off season long. And I did send you a message the other day that when I got an email from a gambling website, which I get emails all the time, telling me the odds on LeBron doing this next, or was Taylor Swift going to show up here? Well, I got an email the other day, the odds on the next Kentucky Wildcats head coach, and at the top of the list was Richard Pitino. Not Rick Pitino, Richard Pitino, the odds-on favorite to be the next Kentucky head coach. Are you comfortable with sharing your reaction when I told you that?
Yeah, I think I told you were insane. I don't remember the exact one. I mean, you know, that's such a different animal right there. I can confidently tell you that whatever the gambling odds are, you should quadruple it, because there's no chance I will be. That's the one job I could say I know I will not be the Kentucky coach. That's it's fun theater to watch it all go down. I grew up there. It's an amazing place. And it takes a special type of person. I think John Calipari was that. I think my dad was absolutely that. That's basketball heaven through and through. But honestly, Albuquerque reminds me a lot of the passion is very, very similar to Kentucky. Kentucky certainly had way more success than we have. Yeah. Those odds are absurd.
Are you turning down?
Right, I'm turning it down.
You're taking your name out of contention.
Yes, I'm going to pull it out. Yeah.
Let's see if Goodman and Norlander and all of them get on that. We'll wrap this up by spinning forward a little bit. Next year, again, until the end of April, we don't know. Until really the season starts next year, we don't know what the roster is going to be. That's part of the current era of college basketball. I want to ask this. At this point, Donovan Dent, I would say, could be one of the top two players in the league next year. I was thinking about it because something came up on social media that made me kind of rank in my mind, at least, who the top players are. I think Tyson Dagenhart at Boise State certainly deserves, going into next year with what we know will be the league at this point. He needs to be considered, you know, preseason player of the year kind of guy. He's been in contention for player of the year for 3 years now. So I think Tyson Dagenhart's right there. I think Donovan Dent has a chance to be right there with him if he can make a little bit more of he's not there right now. I think he does have some strides still to make. But if I told you he averaged next year, and his numbers weren't so far off, but if I told you he averaged 16 points and 7 assists next year, I mean, that's what Isaiah Stevens did this year, 16 and 7. If Donovan Dent, can he average 16? I think 16 is maybe even low. I think he might be able to average 18 points, maybe closer to 20 and 7 assists. That'd be a phenomenal season.
Yeah.
Donovan Dent's future with this program, or do you need to kind of rein him in so he spreads it out a little bit? Like, what's the future of Donovan Dent and the Lobos next year?
Yeah.
It is Donovan's team, right?
It's everybody's team. I don't think it's one guy's team. I think, I want us all to feel like it's our team. I think Donovan, when we signed him, I always said, I think he's going to be the guy that helps us win the league. I really do believe that. Now, we won the conference tournament, but we all want a regular season tournament. That's over 20 games next year. Donovan understands why this is a great fit for him. My thing to guys like JT Donovan, who may have people poking at him and telling, it's no different than me. The reason why I chose New Mexico was I wanted to be a have, not a have not. And for those guys, you want to be a top 10 player in the league. Could you play in the Pac-12, SEC, Big Ten? Sure. But be the best player in your league, or one of the top 5 or 10. And those guys are both in position to do that. And just like I said about Isaac Chu, Isaac Chu doesn't need to go to Texas to become a head coach. He could stay right here and become a head coach. Donovan Dent does not need to go anywhere. Paul George played in this league. Anthony Bennett was the number one pick. Kawhi, you can be here, be be a great player and go to the NBA. Absolutely. Same thing with JT. So, and all the guys in our program that believe that they can get there. So I think they understand that. Donovan is working his butt off. He loves it here. You know, he has told me he's staying. That's today, just like JT. So there's so many people in their ears. We just try to be as transparent as we can with them, but this is the system that's been created. But yes, I think he could be one of the best point guards in the country. I love the way he plays in ball screens. I love the way he finishes at the rim. He needs to continue to get more consistent with his jump shot. He made a big jump from year one to year two. Big year for him in the weight room. Go compete for a player of the year type deal. And I think it's all attainable.
Yeah, and me saying him and Tyson are kind of like two of the guys I think could be there. Tyson has proven it now for 3 years. Yeah. Tyson Degenhardt's proven that he's at that level. Donovan needs to prove he's at that level. I think he showed that he can get to that level, but he needs to now do it for the whole season. And I think the certainly doesn't have two other ball-dominant guards with him like he did this past year, which, you know, you guys won with that trio. So,
but that was more challenging than I think everybody realizes. Yeah. And credit to Donovan and Mash and House. They all made it work. But it wasn't perfect, you know. Do I think we're going to win 30 games? I don't know. I hope so. But I think it'll be a little bit more natural this year than maybe last year.
All right. We'll wrap it up. April, I know, is busier than ever. You got any vacation? You got anything good, fun planned coming up?
No. I think 4th of July, talking about a couple things. Haven't done anything yet. Going to drop the Ava and Zoe. You're going to sleepaway camp in Carolina. Nice. That'll be great. Get them away for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
But other than that, no. I mean, April and May, you get a little time in May. But then June and July, we're going to take those 8 weeks as a team, work our butt off. We always do a family thing with everybody in August. We go to Georgia, Sea Island, Georgia, which is amazing. It's really hot. But it is amazing to get all the cousins together. But other than that, no. You know, I mean, it's just continue to try to strengthen this program best we can. And we're in a good spot, but we just got to keep moving forward.
All your newcomers, the two freshmen at this point anyway, they're planning to be here in June?
Yep. And yeah, we're trying to really encourage. Sometimes it's different, but we want everybody here. There was some national team stuff. Nelly obviously had his visa stuff. Like, we want to get to work, and everybody's on board with it, which is great.
Sounds good. Richard, I appreciate it. I know at this point things change all the time. That's a lot of what we just talked about. So who knows what it'll be like come October and November when the season's about to start. I will bug you again to rejoin us on another podcast then. But for now, I appreciate you coming in and kind of putting a bow on this past season.
You got it. Happy to do it.
Thanks. All right. Well, there you go. There was our conversation with Richard Pitino. Again, thanking Richard for coming in and doing another one of these. He did do a preseason one. Plenty of interviews, plenty of post-game press conferences throughout the year. He was accessible and has been accessible. So I do appreciate a coach for doing that and coming into the Journal and doing this podcast and sharing with you guys his thoughts on not only the season that was, the season that's going to be next year, his off-season plans, and some of the topics that coaches don't always talk about as openly as he does, like talking to other universities about their open jobs and when that comes up and why he does it and all that stuff. At the same time, he does absolutely love it here, and he does think this is a program that that can win, and he wants to be at a program in a conference that can win. So both things can be true. He can like being at UNM, and he can also be open to listening to other jobs when they come his way. And these weren't just any jobs. The job he turned down last year at University of South Florida, I think, was $1.8 million offered, and he got paid $1.1 this year. So he turned down a lot of money to come back to UNM. If Louisville, who he did talk with, happened to offer a job, they did not offer, but he was one of the two final people they spoke with, and Pat Kelsey got the job. But had they offered, he would have doubled his salary at least, maybe more than doubled his salary to go to Louisville. You have to do that when he does have three kids and a wife and a family, and he's in a career path that all of us would probably, you know, consider. If somebody came to us and offered us a job to double our salary and stuff like that. So I'm glad he's open enough to do that. A lot of coaches don't do that kind of stuff. Hope you enjoyed that conversation, though, with Richard Pitino talking about Lobo basketball. Hope you enjoy all these conversations on the Talking Grammar podcast and the Albuquerque Journal's podcast network. We're bringing a lot of content to you, not just Lobo basketball, all kinds of topics now. So glad you're here. Glad you're listening. Appreciate you for being here. Again, I want to remind you that this episode is presented by TLC Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, Electrical, and I just Can't thank them enough for helping us bring you these, and I can't thank you enough for watching them and subscribing to the Albuquerque Journal when you can, abqjournal.com, and here on the YouTube page as well. So thanks again. Until next time, thanks for watching.